golfj.com.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the GolfJ.com podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett Ticone and Doug Brown here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York. And we've got probably the biggest show of the year tonight. We're going to talk about the Tour Championship, Rory's win, the Ryder Cup, the final captain's pick of Ryan Moore being made, and we'll preview all the action in Hazeltine. And, of course, we're going to talk about Arnold Palmer, who passed away on Sunday. You knew he wasn't doing well over the past several months, and kind of in the back of your mind you might be thinking. But
it's got to be close.
But it was, when he's gone, and as long as I've been alive, he's been an icon.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what were your guys' impressions or thoughts on Palmer?
Oh. Well. I mean, I don't know about you, Jim, but we're in the same era there. I never saw him play personally on the PGA Tour, but everything you ever heard about him and knew about him, you know, he's just such a global icon. I mean, he was as big as they get in golf all over the world. You know, they were watching something on Golf Channel today, how big he is in Japan. Still right. To this day, his brand, his umbrella in Japan is all over everything. I mean, he has clothes there and all kinds of different things. His reach was so far. He was Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. He was Tiger Woods before Tiger Woods, as far as global brand awareness and perspective on things. Not necessarily the best player we've ever seen.
Right.
Obviously, there's a few better than him, if you're talking about that. But as far as just the guy himself and how much he was known, I mean,
he transcended golf into the American culture, or absolutely, the global, you know, culture.
Yeah.
So
no question.
Now, Brian, I can barely remember him playing competitively. I can still remember when I first started watching golf. Sure, he was in the majors and stuff, but maybe once or twice he might have figured into a final round. But I never saw him battle Nicklaus in those days. It was Nicklaus Watson was the first big rivalry.
Exactly.
And Norman and Faldo. But do you remember when Palmer and Nicklaus were going head-to-head?
Well, a little bit. It was more so, I think, there was a move where nobody liked Jack Nicklaus because he was beating up on Arnold Palmer.
Right.
You know, Jack has since become an icon himself as well and a fan favorite, but Arnold was Arnold. And they didn't like that Jack coming in and taking care of business on him. But Arnold always had a huge following. And I think 90% of the crowd would always be pulling for Arnold, maybe even more. And if that was happening today, they'd still be pulling for Arnold.
Right,
You know, I saw the guy play a couple times personally. He played at Oak Hill one year in a senior PGA, I believe it was, and I was there with Ed Boudreau, and we followed them around. And I saw him play in Florida a couple times, and always had a huge following. I felt a sense of loss for not even knowing the man.
Sure.
But I felt a sense of loss. I don't think there's ever been anybody in sports that has touched kings and queens and presidents and steel workers and iron workers and all that. I don't know if there's ever been that breadth from anybody. I mean, Muhammad Ali was big, Michael Jordan big, but Arnold Palmer way above those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah, he was just such a warm personality, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just the guys and ladies that they kept talking to all day today just kept reiterating the fact of what a warm personality he was and just what a overall good human being he was and just how much he cared about everybody. Anybody that he talked to, he just really legitimately wanted to have a conversation with. And they were saying, you know, that sometimes there's, you know, people that you'd want to meet an athlete and have a conversation with them, and it doesn't really turn out how you thought it would. You know, they're not the person you think they are sometimes. And that Arnold Palmer and his personality was genuine, and he was just really the right type of person you'd want to associate yourself with.
Yeah, and today they said that he's either number four or number five this year in endorsement earnings for golfers. And if you step back and just think about that for a second, it's phenomenal.
Look how far-reaching his products are.
Yeah, think of the Arnold Palmer iced tea, the actual, you know, bottled product now that they have. Yeah. That used to be the way you mix a drink, lemonade and iced tea. But now they actually sell it. Bought it for years. They have, and it's every golf course carries it.
They said the number today. They had the guy that runs the bottling company there for him. I forget. It's in the high millions of how many cans of that they sell a year now, and it's only been 10 years since it came on the market.
Well, you know, in this world of celebrity and the way celebrities and sports figures are treated almost like royalty, Arnold Palmer, to me, I remember the one thing that kind of stuck out is anybody I know that ever met him, and I never met him, or interacted with him, they felt like he genuinely wanted to be interacting with them as well. And he would remember names, and he would sign return letters when people sent him letters. And so just so gracious, and it comes off less about how he played golf, but just as an example of the way to live a perfect life.
Yeah. Well, you're talking 37 years since he really played competitively on the 30 to 40 years almost. And for a lot of people who know him, and even, you know, younger people, you never saw him play golf, but you still know his name, and you know that he's a big personality in the world of sports, regardless of what he did on the course. So,
totally agree. I can't imagine anybody being like him in the future. I just the way everybody says the same thing about the graciousness and the eye contact and being comfortable with him. Everybody said that, so it's got to be true.
Sure.
You know, everybody's interviewed and calling in, and a lot of tweets and text messages going back and forth. Everybody that they were revealing on the Golf Channel today was all very consistent message about who he was, how he was. You know, he mentored some of the younger kids. Gary Koch made a comment today that he played with him when he was an amateur, and they were signing some autographs, and Arnold Palmer told him, if you sign your autograph, make sure they can read it.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit, right? And then Gary Koch won the Bay Hill Classic one year, and when Arnold Palmer was making the speech, he referred to the first time he met him 15 years ago.
Wow.
And Gary Koch would have said he just figured the guy would have forgot him.
Sure,
yeah.
And he goes, I was immediately touched that he remembered me from 15 years prior. And you hear that theme repeatedly. Okay.
And I think something that resonates with a lot of people, too, with him is, you know, his background was, basically a farm boy, had to work really hard for, what he got, and then when his father owned the golf course and he worked on the golf course, and sometimes golf gets a little bit of a bad rap for being, some people say it's elitist sport, things like that, but
right.
You know what people can relate to him was his upbringing, and
right.
From that, hard work paid off, and the type of person he was, just an overall complete package, really.
Sure.
He single-handedly brought the game to the masses, because the blue-collar guy could relate to Arnold, and he was one of theirs.
Sure.
So, but he was liked across both sides of the aisle, obviously. The best story I heard on the Golf Channel are the most interesting story I heard, because a lot of the themes were repeated because of the guy he was and the way he touched so many people. So every interview kind of was the same, but everybody would share some stories. But, Arnold's father was a huge influence on him, and he told the story about how he was offered the job at Oakmont. His father was offered the head greenskeeper job at Oakmont. And Oakmont in Pennsylvania, they were at Latrobe Country Club. Was like, Yankee Stadium to a kid living in New York City. And so Palmer was excited about the prospect of, being able to play at Oakmont all the time. And his dad didn't take the job. And Palmer asked him why. And he said, what more could you want than what we have here? Our friends are here. We have security. I love this place.
Yeah.
So, just that type of outlook on life, I guess, obviously rubbed off on his son.
Yep.
And golf will always be a little different, without him around.
It's going to be the first Masters that I've ever lived through that he will not be there.
Yep.
And he didn't hit a shot this year, the opening tee shot, but he's been there forever for me, right? And now he's not going to be next year. And those things are going to repeat themselves, obviously, within, many aspects. But you're right, it's a major loss.
Yeah, I mean, he was a trendsetter in so many ways. I mean, look, like how good of a businessman he was, mm-hmm. to build the empire that he has. But he was kind of forward thinking too. Like somebody was saying today, I think Rich Lerner, who was kind of, you know, anchoring everything today, saying how, you know, the golf shirts that he wore in the early 60s and late 50s were the short sleeves, the tighter form fitting shirts that that are of the style today. Right. And he said he's just so far out ahead of everything with everything he did that, right. You know, it was amazing to see that type of, abilities from him too.
Yep. Well, it was odd timing too on the day of the Tour Championship, yeah. And the Ryder Cup next week, so it's like almost overload for Golf Channel and other, you know, yeah. Golf outlets and this podcast even.
Sure.
We could have spent the whole hour just talking about the Tour Championship, but we got to preview the Ryder Cup as well. And yeah. But I guess it's kind of fitting too that it does show the enormity of what he meant to the game, that it's totally dominated all the coverage. We'll say this, though. Listen to Mike and Mike in the morning. I only caught about 20 minutes of it on my ride, you know, to get my coffee and go to work. But, you know, they probably had already talked about it, but they talked about the Jose Fernandez death, and they talked about NFL football, you know.
Yeah, I think if you – really other than Greeny, you get those guys, they can't carry the talk about golf too much.
Right.
I think it gets kind of overlapped there, because even on the big tournaments, they have to bring in Andy North and a bunch of people. And
yeah.
You're right, they didn't do a whole lot about it, but I don't know if it's tough for them when football dominates their show this time of year.
Yeah, on a Monday. Yeah. So that's just the whole timing of it was just – it's like a lot going on. So we should probably move on and get to the bulk of our show. Before we do, a couple local golf notes. I played in a two-man scramble at Geneva Country Club yesterday. We played okay. We shot a 69. My partner was Ed Boudreau and didn't win any money. The tournament was won by Scott Harris Jr., former national champ for St. John Fisher, and his partner Jason Clark lives in Newark. They shot 61. And then second place was Alex Love and Sam Venuti. They were tied with Cody Endrist and Sandy Romeo, 64s. And we were paired with the GCC's pro John Rossi and Billy McDermott from Geneva, who came in fourth and shot 65.
I was going to tell you had a nice round until you said they shot a 61.
Yeah, well, that was ridiculous. They won by three.
Crazy.
64, I would have thought would have been like the winning number, and sure. That was second. But 61 at that course where those pins and greens were, those greens at Geneva are as close to playing in a PGA Tour event that you'll find anywhere, because even on the nicer courses they usually don't have them super fast, but for this tournament they had them tournament ready, and it, you know, stimping at 13.
Wow, it's fast.
So great job over there. That was a fun weekend, a perfect day for golf. And also congratulations locally to Josh Durso of fingerlakes1.com, Silver Creek Club champ, men's club champ in Waterloo. Shot a 73 and an 80 to win by three or four shots. So
good for Josh.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Young guy. He said that was been his goal for the past couple of years, and
got her done.
Got it done. Good. So he didn't, Josh or Scott Harris and Jason Clark did not win as much money as Rory McIlroy won this weekend. That's for sure.
No.
$15.3 million payday for the FedEx Cup Championship and the Tour Championship purse, first place. He holed an eagle on 16 and then burst into contention just like that when it was looking like he was going to fall just short. Dustin Johnson comes in, shoots the worst score of the day. And as we were talking about on the last time we were together, was the Johnson had the worst Johnson played, the more other people had a chance to win the FedEx Cup. So Johnson needed to finish third or worse, I think, or tied for second or worse for McIlroy to win, and so that easily happened. And Johnson was actually sitting there in the clubhouse watching on TV to see if he was going to win the $10 million or not.
Rooting for Ryan Moore.
Yeah. Or Kevin Chappell. Either one of those guys win the playoff, and Dustin Johnson gets $10 million. But no, Rory came through, and in a year that he was ridden off and really played horribly until the past month.
He won two of the last four.
Yeah.
Is your FedEx Cup champ, and you know, poised to make another run at number one in the world with Jason Day withdrawing. So a lot went on at Eastlake. And for, you know, most of the tournament, it looked like Dustin Johnson was going to cruise to the FedEx Cup champ, and didn't happen. So
I would think everybody felt Sunday morning it was Dustin's tournament to win, even though he was tied going to the last round with Kevin Chappell.
Nine holes to go.
We've talked about Kevin Chappell several times on the show as being an up-and-comer. I think he showed his mettle pretty well. But I didn't see Dustin shooting 73 coming in.
No.
But I thought the tournament ended up very good with we've talked about Ryan Moore a lot in the last month or so on the show as well.
He's been so consistent.
So I think three good scores, minus 12 for the playoff, right? Yeah. And then a pretty riveting playoff.
Yeah, it was everything that the tour could have wanted, and everything old Linksoul could have wanted.
Yeah,
with Ryan Moore
getting a lot of pub.
Yeah, he had the nice Linksoul logo on the
he did
back of his shirt. That was the most prominent placement. I know we're big Linksoul fans here in the studio.
I think PXG was kind of happy too.
PXG,
or would have been happier.
Aria, I mean, he got a lot of pub.
Right.
They all did.
And now he's heading. Well, we'll talk about this in a second, but he's heading to Hazeltine. So,
you knew once when Rory eagled on was it 16?
Right.
When he eagled there, you knew there was going to be a lot of excitement because he was just feeling it, and you know, Moore was so steady, Chappell was steady. And it was just great drama. That's all that the PGA Tour could ask for right there, was the way that finished out. I'm sure, you know, they would have liked to have seen Johnson up there a little higher and, you know, maybe win it with better play. Because to hand him the trophy with a 73 wouldn't have been probably as exciting as what happened.
Yeah.
But there was one marquee name, big marquee name out of the three.
Yeah.
And the other two have been certainly earned their stripes during the course of the summer.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked about Ryan Moore not only this last month or, you know, 6 weeks. I mean, he's won a few tournaments now.
Yes.
I mean, he's not, you know, he's not just one of the names down the list that just, you know. Billy Horschel came out of nowhere when he
sure
did it 2 years ago, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And now he's more of a household name in the golf world from what he did there. But Ryan Moore has been playing well for, you know, a number of years now.
It was not a surprise to see him up there.
No, not at all.
Well, again, Rory kind of burst back onto the scene. The Tour Championship was McIlroy's fourth FedEx Cup playoff win in his career. He won two playoff events in both 2012 and 2016. His fourth win surpasses Tiger Woods for most wins in FedEx Cup playoff history. 5-under-30 on the final nine holes of regulation in Eastlake. He was just the third winner this season to play his final holes in 30 or fewer, and he does it in the biggest round of the year. Outside the majors, Smiley Kaufman, if you remember, shot 29 on the final nine at Summerlin at the Shriners, and Jordan Spieth shot a 30 in his back nine at Colonial. So, you know, looking at the culmination of the PGA Tour season, Rory finishes on top, Dustin Johnson second in FedEx Cup point standings, followed by Patrick Reed and Adam Scott and Paul Casey. I think all three of those guys, if at the beginning of the year you said they were going to finish 3, 4, 5, you probably would have had your list a little different. And then Jason Day, number one player in the world, finishes sixth after withdrawing, and there's so many questions about him heading forward with his back, and a lot of people say the way his swing is, he's never going to be able to, you know, overcome back issues with his swing. Ryan Moore, seventh in FedEx Cup standings, is probably poised for a great season next year. And then Kevin Chappell, the youngest guy of this bunch, the youngest newcomer. I don't know. How old is Chappell?
I don't know. He's been on tour for a couple of years. My guess he's going to be mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
And so not any, you know, but he finishes ahead of Jordan Spieth.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably the one guy along with Chappell that really broke through was Russell Knox, finishing 10th with a couple of wins, including a world golf title. But it's the big names are still up there. They were all in contention, the Spieths, the Days, the Dustin Johnsons and the Rorys, you know, and you mix in some new names. And the state of the tour heading forward, I think, is in great shape. Absolutely. At least from a golf fan's perspective. Sure. I don't know from an everyday sports fan's perspective, but from a golf fan's perspective, this is great. Parity.
You see a mixture of these 10 names of guys who were hot in the beginning of the year and faded somewhat, mm-hmm. and then just the opposite where they got at the end. Because you look at, Rory McIlroy obviously got hot towards the end. But even Patrick Reed, Paul Casey got hot towards the end.
Definitely.
You know, and then, of course, Kevin Chappell as well. But Jordan Spieth, mediocre year kind of for him.
From
all year long.
Based on a year maybe. Before, player of the year.
And here he finishes number 9 in FedEx, and he won a few. It's hard to say mediocre, but.
Compared to the standard that he had set after winning back-to-back majors and almost winning 3 in a row.
Right.
Right. And Jason Day was on top all year long, and Adam Scott won 2 early on and then kind of non-existent.
Kind of cruised.
And you have to wonder where Day would finish if it wasn't for the health issues. You know, he was in contention when he withdrew. Well, he was in the process, I think, of also making a triple bogey win, but you assume that was due to the health issues. And, you know, he withdrew from one major this year or two?
I think two.
So he's been working with a mentor, Tiger Woods, lately. He talks about Tiger a lot when they converse.
He's picking up some of his traits.
Well, so maybe he ought to look at what's going on with his 40-year-old body.
Yeah.
And make those mechanical changes now because Jason Day's, what, about 30? 29, 30?
I think he's 30, yeah.
Okay, so these next 10 years, he's not going to make it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So what's wrong with hitting the ball 295?
Tiger didn't have those issues at 30.
No, leading to him, though, but probably didn't know it.
Right.
But Jason's had a spell now of, a couple years anyways, of having back problems.
Yeah.
And the vertigo issues that he had to overcome, but the back.
Back is not good.
You can't play golf with a bad back.
Nope.
And it can happen.
You know, and these guys are walking, too. You know, they're walking. How many miles a week, you think, in a PGA Tour event? 40 miles they're walking a week?
Well, in a week, yeah, probably.
7,000 yards, and some of them are not straight.
I mean, there's never a straight line.
Right.
And you figure you're walking at least 7 miles a tournament. Yeah.
You're walking the course yardage, at least double the course yardage. Through the course of a round, from all the pacing back and forth by the greens and walking left and right and from tee to green on some holes.
Right.
You're not carrying your golf bag, but if you have anybody that has a bad back knows that when walking hurts.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're at least you're in the 30s for miles, even you count practice rounds and everything else that goes
They're working out, too, and maybe that's got to be reviewed, how intense some of the training is or change the technique of the training.
Don't tell Rory that.
Well, he has, up until the last month, he hasn't done too well either with his new physical fitness regime that he's into. So,
don't you think, though, with him, it was more of a short game, his issues?
It definitely was his issues.
He's still bombing it. He's still hitting his irons pure. Right.
But we don't know if his back was bothering him, therefore he couldn't putt practice as much as he would normally.
Yeah, it could be true.
But I don't know. I never heard any stories about him not being healthy. But,
right.
I'm not sure.
I also looking at this top 10. Rory McIlroy, an Englishman, is the FedEx Cup champion.
Yep.
When it was seemed to be almost a lock for an American to win on Saturday night.
Right.
Johnson and Reed and Moore and Chappell and Spieth. Those are your Americans. So half, that's 5 names I just read off. Americans here on the American Tour, although the PGA Tour has become the tour for the top players, whether you're European or Australian. And Adam Scott and Jason Day, Australians. Casey, an Englishman. 2 Englishmen in the top 5.
Well, Rory's an Irishman.
Well, there's some debate about that. But, yeah, you're right. He is an Irishman. But he also would have worn, if he had gone to the Olympics, it would have been for England, correct?
No, Ireland, Northern Ireland, though, right? That was the difference. It was Northern Ireland or Ireland, so he would have went Northern Ireland, I think. Yep. With is that where Grant McDowell?
Grant McDowell. Don't they have a debate between those two because of that? There's some bad blood there for some reason.
I think that has to do with their agent.
Could have been that chubby Chandler.
Yeah, got all that started.
Yeah. And then Russell Knox, either way, from Scotland. I'm sure of that.
Great bit, GB&I.
Yeah, right. That whole northern, North Atlantic.
Yeah, we'll call it GB&I for now.
So, then Russell Knox. So it is a international leaderboard, and with some great Asian players like Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, he was up there for a while. He kind of
Unlike the the LPGA Tour, there's no Asian presence on the top 10 of the FedEx Cup standings.
No.
So, for whatever that's worth, game of golf. Point being, you know, it was a great season, and I can't wait for next year.
Which is in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Safeway Open. None of these guys will be playing in the Safeway Open, though. But no. Tiger Woods
but we
will
have something to talk about.
Yeah, Tiger Woods will be playing in the Safeway. So that's after this week's Ryder Cup ends, that's going to be the focus for a while. So the other big news to come out of the golf world on Sunday was that finally, 4 days before the 5 days before the event starts, the U.S. finally has a complete team. So, Ryan Moore, Davis Love III's captain selection. He added Moore with his final captain's pick to round out the 12-man roster after he went toe-to-toe with Rory McIlroy on Sunday before falling on the fourth playoff hole. Moore matched McIlroy's final round 64 to join a playoff, showed great fortitude under pressure in the playoff, and he also was winner of the John Deere Classic in August. He's had top 10 results in the Barclays and the Deutsche Bank before his runner-up at the Tour Championship. So if you're Davis Love III in this Ryder Cup action committee and you say, we're not going to pick somebody left for the Tour Championship, you better pick a guy who has played as well as Ryan Moore has over past 3 weeks. You know, if they waited and then they said, hey, Bubba.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been a joke.
Stupid.
I mean, Moore earned his way on, and I'm glad to see the pick. Yep. And I think he's the best choice of the remaining guys.
No question. You know, he and Chappell were playing well, and now we have a team that's pretty much complete other than one goofy pick that we all probably agree on. But
who, Ricky?
Yeah. Could be any worse form coming into this tournament and be on the team.
It's true. A little pressure going to be on Ricky.
I mean, he and
I would have took Thomas over Fowler.
Yeah.
Thomas.
And the other one that I'm concerned about is Koepka. And like we've talked about, Doug, the two-year window really got him in because he didn't play well at all this year.
And, yeah, injuries.
Yeah.
Right.
Ankle.
So, you know, there's some question marks. And obviously there's the youngsters on the other side too.
The only question, the first eight because of the two-year window – of points.
Yeah.
So there's always some hot guys and some cold guys with those eight, but that's the way that thing is set up. So
yeah,
the scrutiny always comes to the captain's picks.
Like, I don't mind Zach Johnson being on the team, even though he hasn't had a great year either. You know, he's got some metal in this. He's played in it a bunch of times, right. And it's pretty good when it comes to these types of events. So I don't really, not as concerned about him. But, yeah, if you were to take Bubba after – you know, kind of hasn't done anything. I mean, he's seventh in the world, granted, again, on a two-year.
Right.
But
I don't think anything would have been wrong with him taking Bubba had it been they didn't wait this long.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody could have argued with him taking Watson a month ago. He's the number seven player in the world.
Well, that's right. What I mean. Why you take him instead of Ricky and wait and see. I mean.
Right. Yeah, make Fowler play his way in.
Yeah, make Fowler play his way in if you're going to do that because he's – you know, if you're going to take one of the two, they're neither in great form right now. But, you know, Bubba didn't play bad this weekend. And, you know, he's been playing much better than Ricky. That's for sure. So, kind of got this backwards.
Well, I believe my opinion is that Bubba was going to be the pick yesterday almost no matter what. So, let's get Ricky Fowler in those first three picks. And it keeps me away from the scrutiny of taking him yesterday. Because he didn't play in the final 30 event, right?
Yeah, sure.
So let me get Ricky in the first three, and it kind of goes under the radar a little bit.
Right.
And then the task force said, let's wait to pick the last one until yesterday after the league championship because of the Billy Horschel situation 2 years ago, right? So
which has
seemed if the tournament went differently, I strongly believe Bubba would have been the pick.
So you think if Moore didn't make the playoff, let's say Moore finished third.
Even third, good point. I think Bubba gets picked.
Hmm.
All right. Because it would have been done deal. Then I would have questioned, why have the task force? Why wait so long?
Yeah.
Even then, if Ryan Moore finishes third, he still played his way on that team in my mind.
Especially
if he finished 30th, I might take that back.
Yeah. Well, we've been, again, not to hit it over the head, but we've been talking about him for weeks. He's played well enough to be on this team.
Right.
Do you think that Ricky was put on the team for the simple fact that he's on the task force?
Was he part of the task force?
Yeah.
Really? Well, that's inside trading.
I mean...
But I think at least with the way it was set up, they got it right. They let the tournament play out. You got the hot golfer. We don't know how it's going to go yet by the end of the week. I mean, Ryan Moore could win all of his matches, could lose all of his matches, but the Task Force by Design, I believe, got the pick right.
This pick, yes.
Yes.
And hey,
this pick,
it could make the difference between winning and losing.
Yes.
If they it comes down to a couple points on Sunday and Ryan Moore goes 3-1 or 4-0, and you think, well, geez, if Bubba was there and he went 1-3 or 0-4,
right.
No, that's the difference between winning and losing. So I got a lot more confidence knowing that Ryan Moore is going to be representing us.
Sure.
I do too.
Of course, if we win, there's no scrutiny.
Yeah.
But if we lose, that's when the Tom Watson, Phil Mickelson press conference always takes place.
Yeah, right.
You know, we get that stuff going again. So,
well, you do have to like Ryan Moore as a pick overall, not just because he played really well this weekend and yesterday. You know, again, his experience in match play events,
right.
U.S. Pub Links, U.S. Amateur champion, NCAA champion. He was in the I think he made it to the quarters of the match play this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he did.
So. It's there's really nobody's going to complain about this pick.
I don't think so. I think he's solid. I like his demeanor. He's kind of low-keyed. I bet he's a good partner.
Yeah.
Because he's not bigger than his partner.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. He's not going to be raising his hands for the crowd to go nuts while his partner's trying to putt.
Right.
I think he's going to be a pleasure to have in that team. And I think it's the perfect choice.
Now, what about he and Rory going out last on Sunday?
That'd be good.
Keep the match going.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
Well, along with winning the 2002 U.S. Amateur Pub Links, he also won the NCAA Individual Championship in 2002 and the U.S. Amateur in 2004. He's played in the Walker Cup, the Palmer Cup, the World Amateur Team Championship. So he's got plenty of experience in this type of thing. We definitely all agree. We don't always all agree, but we all agree this was the right pick.
Yes.
No question. Glad it worked out for him.
So, lead me right into the Golf J Trivia Challenge for the week. Tweet your answer at the Golf J, and the first to tweet will win a GolfJ.com hat or just a Golf J hat. There's no .com on the hat. No. Or is there?
No.
Doesn't say like on the side .com?
Yeah, maybe. I think
it does.
Somewhere around there.
So, this is actually kind of easy. So, get your Twitters ready. Moore will be one of just two rookies on the U.S. team. Name the other. So we'll give you the answer at the end of the show if you don't know it already. And that brings us to, I guess, our official Ryder Cup preview. So there's nothing like the Ryder Cup. There's nothing like it in all of sports. It's the Olympics and the World Series and the Final Four all wrapped up into one. It's got it all. It's 3 days of match play. It's the game we love being played in a different scoring system than we're used to, the 4 days of stroke play, and with everything on the line in terms of us versus them, U.S. versus Europe. And while the U.S. used to dominate this event, not so anymore. And it's 2009 was the last time that we won.
Yeah,
2008
At Brookline, little Brookline, right? Last time we won was when we made
fools. Leonard made the long
run. No. That was way long. That was the last time we won was with Zinger at Valhalla.
Oh yeah, right, Valhalla.
Yeah. But the Brookline was the one before that was the last time I think we lost a couple in a row before we won again with Zinger.
So. Like, with every loss, you know, the pressure from the American golf community mounts, and here we are hosting at home at Hazeltine in Minnesota. And again, you look at this on paper and you think we should probably take care of business here and get this win, but anything can happen. So, and we're going to see what happens on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They'll play foursomes and four ball, which is alternate shot, and best ball is more commonly known around your average golf courses here on Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday they'll have 12 singles matches. And the whole thing will be televised on Golf Channel starting at 7:30 a.m. These are Hazeltine time, so even earlier for us here on the East Coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Saturday from start to finish, Sunday from 11 a.m. Minnesota time to 5 p.m. on NBC. Golf Channel has the Friday coverage. And NBC has a Saturday Sunday coverage, and you can also watch live streams at RyderCup.com or on the NBC Sports Live app. So I love it. I think I just summed up why I love it. Why do you guys love the Ryder Cup?
Well, I was fortunate enough to go in 1995 and see it firsthand, even though we lost. So walking off the grounds at Oak Hill that Sunday night, a little disappointed in the loss by the USA. However, absolutely hooked on the format, the event. We even talked about how we were going to go to wherever it was in Europe in 97. We didn't go, okay? But we were talking about doing that. So watching the crowd and the spirit, the songs that the Europeans sang and the USA chants from our side, and you could tell that both sides were really into the competition. It was an event like no other. I've been to many, many golf tournaments. It's an event like no other in golf.
Yeah.
We were the overwhelming favorites that year in 95 and had a nice lead going into Sunday and didn't get the job done in the singles matches. But I liked the whole it was fun to watch the leaderboard, the way the scores were going up and down, especially later in rounds because early on, obviously the scores aren't or the points aren't updated until the matches are closed out. So it's got to get to like the 15th hole, the 16th hole before, you know, the points become official, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just neat to watch the strategy of that and the emotion of it. We followed Tom Lehman and Seve Ballesteros on Sunday. Seve hit it all over the place and kept tying holes. a lot of spirit, a lot of drama. It's a real, real terrific event.
Yeah, it's something to behold for sure. A couple of the things that really stand out to me on and why I like it so much is, one, the team aspect of it, where you're aside from Sunday singles, you're not out there alone out on the course. You know, you've got your teammate, your partner that you're playing with, but you also have the captains are there, guys that are done playing or aren't playing that.
The wives are all there.
It's just the team spirit of it really stands out in a game that's very much singular by nature. The scoring, I like how it's a point system. You know, you don't talk about who's 4 or 5 under, who's 6 under. You know, this guy's +3 on the day. No, that doesn't matter one bit.
Right. Up or down.
It's all about winning that hole. You know, and how how many are we up? How many are we down? You look at the scoreboard. So those are two things that really stand out for me and why I like it so much. And you know, then just everything about it as far as the fans go. It's not your normal crowd that, for the most part, is quiet and has the golf clap. You don't see any of that. You see them egging them on from
right.
When they're riding Monty and Rory, or not Rory, but Sergio. To the Europeans giving our guys stuff when it's over in Europe. So right. I always enjoy it more when it's on the state side because you get the bigger crowd, pro USA crowd.
Right.
But to watch something like this and all those guys and the camaraderie they have when you see a team come together, and I think really showed when Zinger was together, or, put the team together, and how much thought he put into who he had playing with each other. Mm-hmm. And he put the pods together with the, three guys in each pod and really put a ton. It just seems like, I'm sure these guys put a lot of thought into it as well. But
right.
But from, being the last time we won it and how much thought he put into who's going to play with who,
right.
It just, that gets you going too. You see if there's a coach.
See how it plays out.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of things I like about it, but those kind of stand out in my mind.
Something else about the crowd, what Brett was saying. On Friday and Saturday, there is only 4 matches going on
right.
At any time on a golf course. So if you think about a golf course having 30, 40, 50,000 fans, they're all congested into basically 4 holes.
Yeah.
Where a normal event, they're spread out because they're waiting for a bunch of groups to come through and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So when something does happen, the roars are louder.
Yeah.
The explosions are it's more intense. That you won't see it in a more normal tour event until – like yesterday, everybody ends up on the 18th hole eventually, or they go home.
Sure.
So come Friday morning at 7:30, there's going to be 30 or 40,000 fans basically on the first hole.
When they said they built the first tee box like a stadium, they put, like seats all the way around it and made it real, bowl effect, so it's going to be really loud.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about it is I don't know what other sporting event of this magnitude is – there's no money on the line for the players.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of stipends they get or if there's a winner.
There's a contribution now to a charity in their name, but it's really small.
Compared to what they play for every week. Yeah, right. So these guys all come and care so much and want to get on this team so bad, and not one of them is getting paid for it. Now, you could argue that sponsorships for guys that are on the Ryder Cup team are more readily available and all this stuff, but at the end of the day, when they're out there winning and losing, doesn't mean more money in their, you know, in their bank accounts like it does in a normal week.
Right.
So that makes it special. But yeah, it's going to be an outstanding week. And just to run through the rosters real quick, if you're starting with Europe, they have Darren Clark's the captain, vice captains Thomas Bjorn, Padraig Harrington, Paul Lowry, Ian Poulter, who this will be the first time he hasn't played in the Ryder Cup in a long time.
Right.
Sam Torrance, former captain, and the golfers will be Rory McIlroy, Danny Willett, Masters champion, Henrik Stenson, British Open champ, Chris Wood, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Rafael Cabrera-Bello from Spain, Andy Sullivan, Matt Fitzpatrick, the youngest Ryder Cup rookie for Europe in ever, is that right? Or in a long time.
I don't know how young was Seve when he first played.
Well, I think Seve or Sergio.
Sergio is the youngest ever, I think. Yeah. So I think he's the youngest since Sergio's rookie time. And then Lee Westwood, anything but a rookie. And, you know, and if I'm the European fans, that's the one I'm questioning, that captain's pick of Lee Westwood. You can say, well, you know, he's got so much experience, but the same could be said about Bernhard Langer. And, you know, if Westwood and Langer were to go out and play a match head-to-head
right now
tomorrow, who would you pick?
Langer.
Maybe you might pick Westwood, but I'd pick Langer.
I'd pick him over a lot of EJ. It's kind of like when we were talking about Furyk when he was playing well, and you know he faded a touch. But you know, golf, good golf is good golf.
Yes, it is.
And you know, to for anyone to say that Langer didn't deserve any consideration would be nuts.
So it's Westwood, and then Germany will be represented by Martin Keimer, and then Thomas Peters, who is like the wild card of this team. I think you know he could be one of the guys I would least want to play. Is this Thomas Peters? For the American side, captains Davis Love III and vice captains are Jim Furyk, who is under consideration for being on the team, Tom Lehman, Steve Stricker, and Tiger, and then Bubba Watson, a vice captain too. So the biggest knock on like Bubba was that he's going to kill team chemistry, and then you bring him on board
as
a captain, which can't part doesn't necessarily make sense to me, but I think it was a consolation prize maybe after not.
Do you need six captains? That's my question.
Yeah, I guess you really don't. What, are you going to have a couple follow each match maybe? I don't know. And then Tiger, if Tiger wants to be a captain, then Tiger gets to be a captain, right?
Well, yeah, but I could see Tiger being a captain. A lot more than I could see Bubba.
Tiger,
under
not
the circumstances, I think Tiger's a much better choice than Bubba Watson.
Not to mention he's
Tiger's got a bad Ryder Cup record.
He does have two runners up at Hazeltine in the PGA Championship.
True, that's so a good point.
He does know the course very well. So, you know, there's a lot of.
But he lost to Wai Yang.
Yes.
He did
at Hazeltine.
Earlier, I was going to say it's a good thing Wai Yang's not on the European team. Rich, and it is also a good thing that Rich Beam's not on the American team.
Yeah, he lost Hazeltine to Rich Beam and Wai Yang, and the two of the probably, you know, you couldn't remember the times Tiger lost and came in second because it didn't happen very often.
Right. And I would say more he didn't have the lead going into the final round against Beam, and he was behind and he birdied the last four holes to almost win the tournament.
Right.
He did lose to Wai Yang, though, because he did have the lead there, so he definitely lost that one. But, you know, Tiger, good, bad, indifferent. He's got a lot of knowledge, whether it's on this course or another course, and I think he brings a lot more to the table. I also think he's a lot more well liked in the locker room than Bubba is.
I think he's more well liked as a captain than he is as a partner.
Yeah,
I think Tiger was a tough partner in the Ryder Cup for guys, and a lot of it is because of who the captains paired him with.
Sure,
you know.
Well,
most famously, Mickelson paired with Tiger more than once that's been done.
Sutton did that one. That was a bad one.
That was a mistake. Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, too, who he's paired with, the aura of Tiger Woods back then, you know, maybe was scared a couple of guys off. You never know. I mean, it's hard to you think about. Look at his team record and his individual record in the Ryder Cup. Right. It's much different.
Stricker seemed to do well with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The older guys that kind of mentored him, so to speak, when he was first coming in. Right. A little better success.
So the U.S. roster, Ricky Fowler, J.B. Holmes, Dustin Johnson, Zach Johnson, Matt Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, Brant Snedeker, Jordan Spieth, Jimmy Walker, Ryan Moore. And the answer to this week's Golf J trivia question that I'm going to give you right now, the other rookie along with Ryan Moore, Brooks Koepka. So, you know, running down that list, we say we're better on paper and everything, but running down that list, it doesn't seem like it's a huge advantage over the, you know, especially the way the list starts for Europe. You know, if we want to go by, you know, McIlroy, Willett, Stenson, Garcia, Rose, you know, two. You got the FedEx Cup champ, you got the Masters champ, you got the British Open champ, you got Justin Rose won a big tournament. Which was a big tournament?
The Olympics.
Yeah, Justin Rose, the Olympic gold medalist.
And he's won a major.
Stenson's been injured, though. He's got a knee problem. He hasn't played in a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's not ready to go, though, but he's been out for a bit, right?
But you do have five major champions on that team.
And then, you know, you put, let's go with our strongest. Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth. Phil Mickelson, it's just not as clear cut if you look at what they did this year.
No.
Recently.
Phil had a good year, but we kind of haven't heard from him, really.
Yeah, he had a great year for a guy his age that everybody was riding off. But, you know, the hottest player on this team is probably Ryan Moore, and he finished second to Europe's hottest player, Rory McIlroy.
Now, remember last year in the President's Cup, were Phil and Zach Johnson paired together?
I would think so. That seems familiar. Yeah.
I thought they had little success, but then Saturday they didn't do so well. When you look at this team, like you said, we have more experience, but really look at who's going to be paired with who.
Well, let's talk pairings. Let's say we're the captains of this American team, you know, and whether it's alternate shot or best ball, you know, so let's just focus on personalities and types of games and not really look at the format, whether it's best ball or alternate. And what are the pairings that you'd come up with? What are ones that stick out to you as winners?
Well, last time I know Reed and Spieth played together and played pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'd assume you're going to see them together at some point in time.
Yep.
That won't be avoided.
Do you do something like put the two rookies together, Moore and Koepka, and just let them go?
I don't know about Moore. I don't have a problem putting with anybody, but Koepka, I would almost put him with a veteran, a Kuchar or a Mickelson.
Phil, yeah.
To keep him, you know, to bring him along. I mean, he's not playing well, and he's a rookie. He's got a lot of
pressure.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd throw two rookies out there together. Not that, and really, the way Ryan Moore's playing and as long as he's been around, I don't really consider him a rookie per se. He's a rookie in you know, fact. But
in this event, yeah.
Yeah, right. But, you know, the way he plays match play, I like him. I like him with any, like, I wouldn't mind him, like, with a J.B. Holmes or somebody like that. You know, you got your long hitter and then you got a steady guy.
I think you got to look at that, too, whether it's foursomes or four ball.
Right.
Because the foursomes you want to have, if you could, the combination of long and short would make some sense if you can do that.
Yeah, so you go with him, so. DJ and Moore or Holmes and Moore would be a good pairing there.
Because you saw yesterday, Moore hit a drive 280 and McIlroy hit one 320. It was like a 55-yard difference or something like that.
Yeah, well, on the 18th hole.
18th hole, that's the one,
357 he hit it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So.
But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, who do you put Kuchar with? You put him with Zach Johnson or you put him with a younger guy? Who do you put Ricky with? Or do
that's
you just,
who I was going to ask next. Who you pair Ricky Fowler with in this group?
I sit Ricky till Sunday.
Don't you sit him?
Somebody's got to sit, so.
Well, Ricky plays a lot with Phil Mickelson in practice rounds.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, go with Mickelson.
So it'd probably be, you see them guys together.
Sure.
Probably quite a bit.
DJ, who's he playing
with? The other
guys,
you know, like Kuchar, Snedeker, those guys could play with anybody.
No, I like DJ and Jimmy Walker. That sounds good to me.
I think you're going to see Fowler and Walker.
You think so?
Good friends, those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities. And it's the same with, you know, if you look at the Team Europe.
When are we going to see them, the pairings?
You won't see them until
Wednesday night.
Thursday night.
For the morning.
Yeah.
That's it.
And you won't see the second round until the middle of the morning Friday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But if I'm Matt Fitzpatrick, who's who's very young, but man, he's a good player. He's somebody to watch out with. You put him like with a Sergio or a Rory, somebody like that.
Sergio's going with Cabrera Bello, I would say, because that's just historically they put the Spaniards, the most successful Ryder Cup team in history,
yeah,
statistically, is Ballesteros and Olazabal, yeah. I think. Yeah. So I would imagine you'd see them together.
You know, interesting, too, we haven't mentioned Brant Snedeker at all. You know, do he and Spieth make a good team, or he and Johnson, not Dustin, but or like Zach? A lot goes into what the captains have to do. There's you start seeing it right now, just looking at these, that like how much pressure is on them.
Well, they know the dynamics now of who gets along with who better than they do other places. So you don't have to call them pods like Zinger did,
right?
But they all do some of that stuff. You know, they know, like, okay, the three of us guys get along, we can mix and match and do that. But there's somebody else that we don't get along with, you know. So why would they bother?
But there is some merit to what you said, is, you know, with the threes, just not trying to go from this guy way over to this guy. You know, just kind of
some symmetry to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got the older guys, you got the rookies, you got you know, long hitters, short hitters, good putter, you know. So if you can find that mix, which I'm sure Davis Love spent way more time thinking about than any of the three of us have.
I go talk to him if I'm the captain. I talk to every one of them and tell them, this is what do you think about playing with this guy?
Sure. Absolutely.
If you had to pick anybody to play with, who would you be?
Guy?
And I would try to just make them all happy. And I think the Europeans actually have it a little bit easier because there's the nationality aspect, and you'll see that a lot where two guys from the same country will play together, because that also, for the Spaniards especially, you're representing Europe, but you're also representing your country, where everybody in America is representing America, but Europe is not obviously a country, it's a continent, and there's different countries and nationalities and language barriers that need to be overcome a little bit here. Mm-hmm. On the European side, but everything's fair game on the American side. So
the thing about it is Davis Love's got to try to figure out a couple scenarios for Sunday. You know, are we leading by two? What's the lineup? If we're tied, what's the lineup? If we're down by two, what's the lineup? Because there might be different lineups for each one of those scenarios.
Yep.
You know, do you make a fast break and get all the guys you're playing the best, do you have them go out first, middle, or last?
Yeah. So I'm always one that puts your best last. So if it comes, the guys that you want to be
the clutch guys,
the guys that you want with it on the line to be the ones deciding it. Yeah. So, and really, all these guys, you know, other than maybe someone like Koepka or Fowler, I don't think you put them towards the end in any situation. But you're talking about 12 of the best players in the world, so. You know, they all should be able to handle that type of situation because they've all been there before in some regard.
Right.
Maybe not in a situation with it all on the line as intense as this will be. But certainly Rory McIlroy and Ryan Moore were just in a pretty intense situation this weekend. So wouldn't be surprised to see McIlroy and Moore, you know, last, because they're already used to the high drama and high pressure. You know, it was just a week removed, so. So it's going to be great. Let's face it. Ryder Cup, I can't believe it. So much better than the President's Cup.
Totally different world. Yeah. Yeah. It really is.
Definitely.
Yeah. Always will be.
And every 2 years, you know, that's the other thing that makes it special, you know. Mm-hmm. So we'll, after this one, win or lose, we'll have to wait 2 more years to either defend or try to, you know, win again for the first time. And this will be over 10 years. If they lose this year, it'll be 10 years.
I just I really hope that Jordan Spieth has a good Ryder Cup, because he's had a quiet year. I mean, again, we've said he has a good year by his standards, though. I think it'll be good for him, and it'll be good for golf if he has a really good Ryder Cup and contributes in a big way.
He seems fidgety.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem comfortable this year. You know, you see him a lot going back and forth with his caddy, and he doesn't seem in the same happy place he was last year.
Yeah, everything came very easy last year.
Sure.
And it's been a little bit more of a project.
Much more of a grind.
Although, still a good year.
Still won twice.
Yeah. So,
real quick here, as time's running down on us, the season's over. The PGA Tour season's over. This Ryder Cup's a PGA of America event. It's not associated with the PGA Tour.
Right.
The Tour Championship was it. And now we have to sit and wait two weeks until the PGA Tour season returns. But looking back at this season,
I was just saying, imagine if that was the NFL, everybody would be loving it.
Yeah, they would. They would eliminate preseason at least.
Exactly.
2016 season, player of the year. Got to be Dustin Johnson.
I think it'll be Dustin Johnson. I don't think Rory wins it. I think Dustin wins it.
Yeah, I think Dustin, you know, had the most consistent.
He's the only major winner of the contenders.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That almost alone. And it was, let's face it, it was a breakout year for the guy.
Hey, won a major. He came in second in the FedEx Cup. You know, he contended in a bunch of tournaments. He won, what, how many tournaments did he win? Three?
I think three, yeah.
Nobody else won more than three.
No.
So, you know, Day, like we said, you really can't consider him now. He withdrew from the tournament. He's had some issues with health-wise, so. That's got my vote.
Yeah, there's only two guys you can talk about is Dustin and Rory, and I think Dustin wins hands down.
Yeah, we all agree there.
Yeah.
Now, we got to be a little quicker with these. Best breakout player, I'm going to give you three. I'm going to give you four. Russell Knox, William McGirt, Bryson DeChambeau, or John Rahm? I'm going with Knox.
Yeah, I'm going with Knox.
But John Rahm is like he could be legit next year.
Yeah, it'd be good if he is. Next,
best round of the year.
Jim Furyk.
58. It's the best score, but man, how about that final round of the British Open with Mickelson and Stenson?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, if you're talking about not being individual score, best drama, best round of the year. Yeah, that would probably have to do it.
That was pretty amazing.
At 58.
It was amazing. You're absolutely right.
The 58 was nice though too.
And. You know, going back to the Masters, Jordan Spieth chunking that wedge. Just think about it. We were at that moment. We were in the mode we were heading into this year's major season, where we were like, you know, Spieth's gonna, you know, maybe win the Grand Slam and all this stuff. And then that one chunk shot, and here we are, nice ninth place finish in the FedEx Cup. Spieth, come on. So, also heartwarming stories this year. Billy Hurley's win at the Quicken Loans National was pretty special. Jim Herman at age 38 getting his first PGA Tour win at the Shell Houston Open. And then flying under the radar a little bit, remember when Greg Chalmers at age 42 won the Barracuda for his first win in 386 starts.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of good stories. And Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy. You know, the big three and now Dustin Johnson, the big four. I think they're still intact heading into next year. I think we still can say we got a big four. And the real question is, how's Tiger going to do it the safe way?
Right.
Is he going to actually get back into the competitive in the majors, really?
Yeah.
So a lot to look forward to.
I got to roll you back real quick on the breakout player of the year. I'm going Tony Finau. Just had to get that in on the last episode of the season. He did win. He won a tournament.
The Puerto Rican Open. And, and he played good over the past month, too.
He did.
Surprised Love didn't pick him. So we'll be back next Monday night. The Ryder, fresh off the Ryder Cup. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have lots of stuff to talk about. So thanks for joining us for this jam-packed edition of the Golf J podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at the Golf J, on Instagram at @_GolfJ. We're at facebook.com/GolfJ. All of our episodes in the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. So see you next Wednesday night at 9 to recap some Ryder Cup action. Until then, hit them long, not often. GolfJ.com.